I called the president. President, we need the National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
One high ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and Michigan, most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynx is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from there.
Yo. And welcome back to Season 3, Episode 2 of the Fix Sports Podcast, which is the realest and blackest sports podcast you have ever heard in your entire life. Coming straight from the side. Going down. How we do it over here on the Freedom Train Network, www.freedomtrainradio.com. Giving you sports news, latest in sports news, the way we talk about it amongst ourselves in the shop. But I'm just bringing the shop to the audio atmosphere to y'all. You know, I'm talking about how we get down to do down to be down to stay down. We come up to come down. Already. Hey, man. I got my harmonica. I know y'all thought I wasn't going to break my harm back out, but my harm is back out, so my harm going to ride with me. Season 3, my harm riding with me, man. You know what I'm saying? We're going to get it down. I'm going to be a world champion harm player. Remember, the Fix is brought to you by On the Shoulders of Giants. On the Shoulders of Giants brings you African history at your fingertips and on the go through the African history book series, the blog, the African history curriculum app, the nonprofit organization, the YouTube channel, as well as lectures, classroom, educational classroom things, keynote speaking engagements, whatever capacity you need On the Shoulders of Giants to give you the information they can, whether it's face-to-face, whether it's digital. Remember, classrooms, they got information that can be used for your smart boards and your classrooms, for your cell phones, for your tablets, all those things. All you got to do, you can even put them on your smart TV now. Smart TV in your home. Remember, just visit www.ontheshoulders1.com as well as www.ontheshoulders.org. And remember, On the Shoulders of Giants, Volume 3, South America, is on the way. Already. Hey, before I get into my topics, I just want to say, I listen to, you know, it's a little rap battle beef going on between Machine Gun Kelly and Eminem. Machine Gun Kelly dropped a track called Rap Devil. Eminem dropped a track called Kill Shot. Machine Gun Kelly 1, Eminem 0. That Kill Shot ain't killing shit. How you gonna have a kill shot with a pellet gun? You know what I'm talking about? But anyway, and I just want to give my 2 cents on that. Anyway, today we're talking about in our HBCU spotlight, we've got MEAC Week 2 Players of the Week. So, you know, we're coming up on Week 3 in college football. And so I'm going to give you an update on the Week 2 Players of the Week. In HBCU news, Alabama A&M is hit with the postseason ban and scholarship reduction. It's going to cover that. Also going to cover the 2018 Hall of Fame induction. Tell you about everybody who's been inducted. Give them a round of applause. Jemele Hill gets a $6 million buyout from ESPN. She's balling. She got money. Manu Ginobili, he retired from the NBA, from the San Antonio Spurs. He's going to give him some love. Going to do a NFL update. We already updated on college football because I did week 1 and week 2. So we're going to recap week 1 in the NFL and also talk about Thursday night game between the last night's game between the Ravens and the Bengals, how the Bengals dominated them. We're going to talk about LeBron James in the first episode of The Shop that came on. And Seattle Storm wins the 2018 WNBA Championship, so I gotta show them some love. And my weekly rant is aimed at the Pittsburgh Steelers offensive line, those, not the whole O-line, but those individuals. Well, anybody who got the feeling, but those, especially those individuals, Mike Pouncey, Marcus Pouncey, whatever, one of them Pouncey boys in the other O-line, can't think of his name right now, talking greasy about Le'Veon Bell's contract situation. They want him to get paid next year. So we're going to talk about that, go in and show out how we do. So let's start this HBCU spotlight at the top. And like I said, we're doing the meet at week two players of the week. So Bethune-Cookman University quarterback, Akevious, yeah, that boy's name is Akevious, A-K-E-V-I-O-U-S. Akevious Williams was selected as the Mid-Eastern Athletic Conference Offensive Player of the Week, the conference announced, right? Delaware State's Brian Cavicante was named Defensive Player of the Week, while North Carolina State's Marcus Pettiford received Offensive Lineman of the Week honors. Bethune-Cookman place kicker Uriel Hernandez and North Carolina A&T State's Keshawn Baker were tabbed as co-specialists of the week. So, Akevious Williams from Bethune-Cookman, he's a quarterback, he's a junior from Madison, Florida. Okay, he's from right down the street, Madison, Florida. Williams came off the bench and passed for a career-high 297 yards in the career, matching 12. He went 12 for 13 passes. That's amazing. He passed for a career-best 4 touchdowns and added another rushing touchdown for 5 total scores on the afternoon in the home win over Virginia on Virginia University of Lynchburg. The defensive player of the week, Brian Cavicante from Delaware State. He's linebacker, 5'11", junior from Portsmouth, Virginia. He finished the weekend with 12 tackles, 8 solo, including 5 tackles for loss, totaling 14 yards. He recovered a fumble on special teams and returned a 14-yard touchdown at St. Francis. Co-specialist of the week, Keshawn Baker of North Carolina A&T State. North Carolina A&T just do it all right. His punt returner, 5'6", junior from Farmville, North Carolina. Baker broke open a tight contest late in the second quarter with a 78-yard punt return for a touchdown versus Gardner-Webb. He finished with a total of 95 yards on 2 returns for an average of 47.5 yards per punt. Uriel Hernandez of Bethune-Cookman, he's a place kicker, 5'7", senior from Homestead, North Carolina. Hernandez was the MEAC's leading scorer as he finished 11-for-11 on his PAT attempts in a win over Virginia University of Lynchburg. It was a career high in extra point attempts. He also kicked off 4 times for an average of 57.8 yards per kickoff, also netting 1 touchdown with 235 yards altogether. Rookie of the week is Sherman McLeod of North Carolina Central. He's a tight end, 6'2 freshman from Raleigh, North Carolina. He had a pair of first half touchdowns, which was a 13-yard and 10-yard touchdown reception in Saturday's win over St. Augustine. He finished the contest with 3 receptions for 54 yards, 2 touchdowns. So we want to make sure that we get up off our feet and put our hands together for the MEAC Week 2 Players of the Week. Hey man, you can MEAC these nuts. Let me stop. All right. So one time for Sherman McLeod, Uriel Hernandez, Keshawn Baker, Brian Cavicante, and Akevious Williams straight down the road from Madison County. Come from Boot Hill with them Cowboys. All right. So HBCU news, multiple Alabama A&M athletic programs placed on NCAA probation. What the happened, right? Alabama A&M University received the final decision of the NCAA Committee on Infractions on September 11, 2018 regarding the NCAA Academic Performance Plan data review and violations related to the certification of a 101 student athletes in 14 sports from 2011 through 2012 through 2015 and 16. The violations were discovered during an NCAA Academic Performance Program data review initiated in the fall of 2015. The case was resolved through the NCAA summary disposition process, a collaborative effort in which the university and NCAA enforcement staff conducted on a joint investigation of the issues and submitted agreed upon findings to the NCAA Committee on Infractions. The investigation confirmed the miscertifications were unintentional, and the NCAA Committee concurred with that finding. The university acknowledged the errors were made in the certification process. Since the beginning of the data review, the university implemented new processes and hired additional personnel in the areas of compliance, academics, and registrar's office to prevent future miscertification. The penalties imposed by the NCAA Committee on Infractions in these cases include 5 years of probation from September 11, 2018 through September 10, 2023. A vacation of records in which student athletes completed while ineligible. A 2018-2019 postseason ban from baseball, men's basketball, football, and men's golf teams. Scholarship reductions for baseball, men's basketball, football, and men's golf teams. Recruiting restrictions for 2018-2019 academic year, including a 13-week ban on unofficial visits and recruiting communications with prospects in all programs in which the violations occurred. A 25% reduction in official paid visits in all programs in which the violations occurred. A 13-week ban of all off-campus recurring contacts and evaluations of programs which the violations occurred, except for men's and women's basketball, football, men's golf, and women's volleyball. Fuck the golf team, that's what it's basically. Oh, no, they golf on them, my bad. A 25% reduction in recruiting or evaluation days for men's and women's basketball, football, men's golf, and women's volleyball. University may not recruit two-year college transfers who will enroll during the 2019-20 academic year. And that's self-imposed by the university. A $5,000 fine plus 1% of the annual budget of the men's baseball, basketball, football, and men's golf team, which was imposed by the university. In response to the data review by the NCAA, Alabama A&M University has implemented a centralized integrated process for reviewing and validating a student's eligibility to compete. A&M has established a cross-functional team that is responsible for the certification of student athletes 4 times a year, improved communication with weekly eligibility meetings between academic and compliance business functions as it relates to both initial and continuing academic eligibility certification. Oh, I lost my place. Certifications and hired professionals with demonstrated academic or compliance experience in a sanctioned university athletic program. Dang, B's. Oh, they're from Alabama. Come on, Mains. Dang, Mains. They got some fans. They taking their time. They got their money. And they ain't looking funny. They got their blues. And A&M, they got the blues. They put them fines on their ass, and it's fast. They did and tried to do it, but still they get it screwed. They got the blues. That's a lot. That was a lot of fines and things that they got to go through for unintentional action. That's all I'm going to say. I don't have all the information. I have what I read. But that's a lot. A lot for a little bit of that. For a little bit of that. Infraction. I mean, they ain't little bit of ass because they ain't know they was ineligible, but it was unintentional ineligibility. So, you know. I wish them well in the future. A&M, Alabama A&M University. AMU. AAMU. You know, I'm from FAMU, so I think AAMU is kind of funny, but hey. It is what it is. They got the blues. All right. So, NBA. NBA, straight NBA, y'all. Let me tell you about the NBA, y'all. You know what I'm talking about, y'all. NBA, y'all. where they put the ball in that hoop shot, where they be going up and down that court shot, and I'm talking about the NBA shot, and I'm talking about dog, cuz, man, that NBA shot. So, in the NBA, we have the 2018 Hall of Fame class, and it is 13 members deep, headlined by Ray Allen, Jason Kidd, Steve Nash, Grant Hill, Tina Thompson, and other people I'm going to read to you. So, first up, you know, they got Ray Allen, who averaged 18.9 points a game, 4.1 rebounds a game. He was 40% from the three-point field in 1,300 NBA games. He was elected by the North American Committee, six-time NBA All-Star, two-time NBA champion, all-time NBA leader in three-point field goals. He was presented by he was presented by Reggie Miller. Maurice Cheeks averaged 11 points a game. Maurice Cheeks is the next person to win who averaged 11 points a game, 6 rebounds, 2.1 steals, and 1,101 NBA games. He was elected by the North American Committee, 4-time NBA All-Star, 5-time NBA All-Defensive Team, 5th all-time NBA steals. He was presented by Billy Cunningham and Julius Irvin. Charles Leffie Driscoll. I don't know who Charles is. I just felt like doing that. So Charles Leffie Driscoll, elected by the North American Committee. He was 786 and 394 in 41 seasons as the NCAA coach. One of 11 coaches to lead 4 schools to the NCAA tournament. Only coach to win at least 100 games in 4 schools. That's tight. He was presented by John Thompson, Mike Krzyzewski, and George Raveling. Grant Hill, he married to Tamia. He already in the Hall of Fame for just being married to Tamia. Hey, that Tamia song, I say the highlight like fire. Hey, leave it smoking, fire. Hey, that Tamia song be riding. Leave it smoking. She want the hot life fires. As long as it ain't no STD. As long as it ain't no STD. Then it really be hot, you see, like fires. Right? So, just shout out to Grant Hill for just being married to Tamia. Right? So, Grant Hill, for his career, averaged 16 points a game, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, and 1,026 NBA games. Elected by the North American Committee. 7-time NBA All-Star, 95 Co-Rookie of the Year, 2-time NBA Champion, 91 and 92. Oh, 2-time NCAA Champion, excuse me. 2-time NCAA Champion with Duke in 91-92. He was presented by Isaiah Thomas, Mike Krzyzewski, Patrick Ewing, and Lonzo Mourning. Jason Kidd, he averaged 12 points a game for his career, 6 rebounds, 8 assists. And 1,391 games, elected by the North American Committee, 10-time NBA All-Star, 2011 NBA Champion, ranked second all-time NBA in assists and steals. It was presented by Gary Payton. Steve Nash is next, has 14.3 points a game, 8 assists, 42.8 behind the arc, and 1,217 NBA games, elected by the North American Committee, 2-time NBA MVP. 8-time NBA All-Star, 3rd all-time in NBA assists. He was presented by Don Nelson. Dino Roger. Dino! 16 points a game, 8 rebounds, 1 block, and 224 NBA games. Elected by International Committee. 2-time EuroLeague champion. Selected as one of FIBA's 50 greatest players in 1991. Selected as one of the 50 greatest EuroLeague contributors in 2008. He was presented by Larry Bird. And, you know, excuse me, this is not the NBA Hall of Fame. This is Basketball Hall of Fame. Did I say that right? Basketball Hall of Fame. I'm talking about NBA Hall of Fame. It's not NBA Hall of Fame. It's the overall Basketball Hall of Fame. Basketball. So this is the 2018 Basketball Hall of Fame class, not the NBA Hall of Fame class. Correction. So Charlie Scott's the next person, averaged 20 points a game, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, and 717 ABA NBA games, elected by the Veterans Committee, 5-time NBA and ABA All-Star. He was the 1976 NBA champion, first African American scholarship athlete at the University of North Carolina. It's presented by Dave Collins, Julius Irvin, Larry Brown, James Worthy, Jerry Colangelo, Roy Williams, and Spencer Haywood. Katie Smith is next. She averaged 13 points a game, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, and 482 WNBA games, elected by the Women's Committee. 7-time WNBA All-Star, ranks 5th all-time in points scored in WNBA history. First female athlete in Ohio State history to have a number retired. She is presented by my homegirl, Dawn Staley, my other homegirl, Tina Thompson. Oh, fine self. Tina Thompson averaged 15 points a game, 6 rebounds, 1 assist, and 496 WNBA games. She was elected by the Women's Committee, 9-time WNBA All-Star, 4-time WNBA champion from 97 to 2000 with the Houston Comets, right? First draft pick in WNBA history. She was presented by the GOAT, Cheryl Miller. Rod Thorne is the next elected. He was elected by the Contributor Direct Election Committee. Served as NBA Executive Vice President of Basketball Operations from 86 to 2000 and President of Basketball Operations from 2013-2015. Served as Front Office Executive for Chicago Bulls from 78 to 85, New Jersey Nets from 2000-2004, and again from 2007-2008, and again in 2010. Then from the Philadelphia 76ers from 2010-2012. 2002 NBA Executive of the Year, presented by Jerry West. Orr Mae Washington, elected by Early African American Pioneer Committee, leader of 11 consecutive women's colored basketball championships teams. Oh, shoot. I don't know about her. Orr Mae Washington. Okay. Member of the Temple University Sports Hall of Fame, elected to Women's Basketball Hall of Fame in 2009. So, Rick Welch, elected by Contributor Direct Election Committee, President and COO of Golden State Warriors, worked in NBA league office from 82 to 99. Riley Wiley, credited with the creation of All-Star Weekend, served as executive for Phoenix Suns and Phoenix Mercury for 9 seasons, including 2 as team president. He was presented by Bill Russell, Lena Wilkins, Annie Myers, Russ Granick, and David Stern. So that is the 2018 basketball, not just NBA, but basketball Hall of Fame, and we would like to put our hands together.
Who wins? Who wins? Who wins? These ain't running. What y'all about? I ain't making best of first minute at that. Who won? Who won? Who won?
Basketball Hall of Fame, and I just learned something new by Orr Mae. Let me find it. What's her name? Orr Mae. Orr Mae Washington. All right, moving on like Maya, because she be moving on. Moving on. So Jamel Hill get 6 smackers. 6 on. She gets $6 million buyout from ESPN. Because ESPN don't know how to have an all-black show for black people doing their thing. And it's catered toward black people. So they lost Jamel Hill and Michael Smith. But Jamel Hill got that $6 million buyout on your ass, though. And if you don't know, now you know. You know what I'm talking about? So, we finna dive deep into it as soon as this computer starts acting stupid. All right, here we go. Here's my story. So this is from Hip Hop Wired. Jamel Hill, you know, I don't say secured the bag, but that's what they say. J- Jemele Hill secured the bag. The sports analyst is leaving ESPN on her own terms, left along with the seven-figure buyout. Bossup can exclusively confirm that Hill will receive just shy of $6 million from ESPN to fulfill the multi-year deal she signed in 2016. Contrary to Musty MAGA belief, they call it Musty, Hill was not fired by ESPN. In fact, she asked to be released from her employment with the network shortly after the ESPN awards in July, according to our source who is familiar with the negotiation. And that's what Bossup is saying. So Jemele and her longtime friend and new business partner, Kelly L. Carter, recently launched their production company, Ledge Freeway Media, and will be concentrating on future endeavors that speak to their honest and socially conscious work. So she gets close to six million. Yeah, because ESPN fucked that all up. I'm surprised. I ain't even gonna lie. I'm surprised ESPN messed that up. But ESPN really, really messed that up. It was too black for them. It was too boogie woogie for them, right? It was too much, whatever. And white people probably was complaining. White people probably won't watch. It's too many darky moments on this show. Why are the black people always smiling with their black stuff, doing black people stuff? I don't even close my eyes because it's black. All right? That's how white people talk, right? But it's funny that this happened. ESPN really dropped the ball, but I'm glad that she got her money, though. She got six-figure buyout from them. That's big. And she's starting her own thing. You know, I told you about that a couple shows ago about Jemele Hill starting her own platform, her own podcast and stuff. And Jemele, you can always be down with the Freedom Train Network. You can always be down with the Freedom Train. I'm just putting that out there, Jemele. If you want to come be down with the Freedom Train Network, you can always be down with the Freedom Train Network. Where she secured the bag, like they say. She got her $6 million buyout from ESPN, and she gets gone by the business. She said, ESPN, kiss my pussy, and went on by her business. And guess what ESPN did? Had to kiss her pussy and give her that money. I bet you they gave her that money. I bet you she got that money. So that's good. I'm glad that Jemele got her money. I'm glad that, you know, she get to walk away, save face. And everything is everything. And of course, you know, fuck boys, pussy holes, crackers, and shit like that gonna try to trash her name. But ESPN fucked that up. ESPN should have either left, he should have left the his and her shit going, or did what you had to do to make the six work with them. But when you try to take, make it seem like it was too dark for you, too much darky stuff, well, that's why we are where we are. And ESPN, y'all done fucked up, but Jemele got that money. So Adam and Eve, don't fall too far from the apple tree. Hey, 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 Adam and Eve. Don't fall too far from the apple tree. One time for Jemele getting that money. So, Emmanuel Ginobili, is retiring from the NBA after 16 seasons. Straight baller? Manu was a baller. Manu was a baller. You can't be mad at it. I can't believe he played 16 years. I thought Manu was older than what he was. But 16 years in the game, man. So let's read about it. The highly entertaining Argentine guard Manu Ginobili of San Antonio Spurs announced his retirement. He's continued the exodus of pillars from one of the most successful franchises in NBA history. The decision was announced on Twitter. So this is his Twitter account. I'm going to read it to you. He says, Today, with a wide range of feelings, I am announcing my retirement from basketball. Immense gratitude to everyone, family, friends, teammates, coaches, staff, fans involved in my life in the last 23 years. It has been a fabulous journey, way beyond my wildest dreams. Manu Ginobili. I just added that last part. So, Ginobili, who was 41, decided his return to the Spurs for 17th season. opting instead to walk away this week after his longtime backcourt mate Tony Parker joined the Charlotte Hornets. Yet, of course, after the San Antonio Spurs blockbuster trade that sent Kawhi Leonard to the Toronto Raptors for DeMar DeRozan, right? The departures of Ginobili, Parker, and Leonard, along with the July 2016 retirement of the Hall of Fame bound big man Tim Duncan, mean that the longtime San Antonio Spurs Greg Popovich has outlasted all of the key members of the Spurs' last championship team in 2014. When the Spurs opened training camp in late September, it would indeed be the first in Popovich's 22 full seasons in charge without Ginobili, Parker, or Duncan present. The TNT broadcasting Hall of Fame for Charles Barkley, whose down-out screams of Ginobili on Inside the NBA have been a league fixture for years, told the Times upon hearing the news, "Today, my man who retired, it's like losing a family member. It was an honor and a pleasure to watch you play. See you in the Hall of Fame." Yeah, 5 years from now, however long they got to wait, Manu going first ballot. Manu, like Duncan, is another certain future Nation of Hall of Famer, and on top of his aggressive and unorthodox style, will be remembered as a serial winner thanks to his numerous club successes in Europe before helping the Spurs win four championships and his many honors with Argentina's national team. The Spurs elected Ginobili with the 57th and second-to-last pick of the 1999 draft. Ginobili's subsequent emergence as a key difference maker, whether coming off the bench or starting, has long been regarded as perhaps the prime example of San Antonio's ability to find gems in the lower reaches of the draft. But team officials have privately conceded for years that they would have drafted Manu much higher if they were so smart, because they admittedly didn't know what they had. So, and Rudy Gay tweeted out, Wow, got to play with one of my favorite players in the last season. Thanks for all you did for the game, Gramps. Manu Ginobili. So Ginobili stayed in Europe for three more seasons after the Spurs drafted him, winning the EuroLeague Most Valuable Player honors in Italy before finally jumping to the NBA for the 2002-03 season. The Spurs won a championship in Ginobili's first season and added titles in 2005, 2007, and 2014. He's a two-time NBA All-Star, often serving as Popovich's go-to game changer when it came to take up the lineup. Fresh off his third title, Ginobili averaged career high in points with 19.5 and rebounds 4.8 in 2007-08 and took home the league Sixth Man of the Year award. On the international stages, the biggest star from the golden generation of Argentina, Ginobili led his country to a silver medal in the 2002 World Championships in Indianapolis and at the 2004 Olympics in Athens, stunning results for what was not known as basketball nation until the likes of Ginobili, Luis Scola, Andres Nocioni, and Carlos Delfino emerged. Argentina failed to qualify for the Sydney Olympics in 2000, then stunned the United States team that featured a young LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Carmelo Anthony, as well as Duncan and Allen Iverson en route to gold 4 years later. So he did take his team to win gold in the Olympics. Ginobili appeared in 2018 playoff games for the Spurs over 16 seasons and will retire ranked in the club's top five in total games played, points, assists, and steals. Popovich, who turned 70 in January, has 1 year left on the five-year contract he signed after the 2014 title run. He joked with reporters for years about being the first to follow Duncan out the exit door, but Popovich has stuck around to try to launch a new era of winning basketball in top 50. So, Manu Ginobili, one time for you. So everybody get up off your feet, put your hands together, show some love to Manu Ginobili. How could it be? Somebody took the mantle from me. Ginobili's gone. The Spurs are so all alone, and they really miss you, Manu. Even though your ass retired, they say fuck the retirement. Come back for one more season, cause we need you though. We need you though. We need you though. But one time for Manu, man. Manu was a baller. And I thoroughly enjoyed watching Manu Ginobili play the basketball for the San Antonio Spurs. He played the basketball for one time for Manu. Right. Ooh, let's talk football. Let's talk football. NFL week one. It's back. Football back. Right? I know a lot of y'all boycotting the NFL. Continue to boycott the NFL. I keep it updated. But I'm telling you, I'm reporting this shit. I ain't watching all the games. I'm watching a little bit, but I'm reporting this shit. So let's get into it. So week one. Start off on Thursday with the Jets and the Lions. And the Jets mollywopped the Lions 48-17. And Sam Darnold looked pretty good. So Sam Darnold had 198 yards, two touchdowns, and one pick six. Sam Darnold's first pass was at pick six. But he settled down and was good. Matt Stafford had 286 yards, one touchdown, and four picks. Isaiah Crowell had 10 carries. 102 yards, two touchdowns. Theo Riddick had four attempts for 20 yards receptions. Inunua had six receptions for 63 yards and one touchdown. Kay Galladay for the Lions had seven receptions, 114 yards. And the Lions did not look good at all. Matthew Stafford, lucky hurt his knee in the game. The Jets totally dominated the Lions. Especially after Sam Darnold settled down. Sam Darnold did look good in his NFL debut. So we're going to see how that goes because, you know, the Jets have, for the last couple, you know, last, you know, little years or so, you know, years, you know, Jets been known to have pretty good defense. So we're going to see what the Jets do this year. But the Lions, ooh, they did not look good. The Jets did look pretty good. Jets are not great. I don't know how many games they're going to win. Don't really expect them to win the division. But Sam Darnold didn't look bad, but, you know, that's just one game. So let's let that happen. So the Rams beat the Raiders 33-13. John Gruden. Yeah, whatever. The Rams with that damn team with all that damn talent over there. So Jared Goff went 2 for 30. He had 230 yards, two touchdowns. Todd Gurley had 20 carries for 108 yards. Brandon Cook had five receptions for 87 yards. For the Raiders, Derek Carr had 303 yards, three picks. Marshawn Lynch had 11 carries for 41 yards and touchdown. And Jay Cook for the Raiders had nine receptions, 180 yards. So, I was vaguely watching that game, barely watching that game. The Rams did look pretty good. The Raiders did. So turnovers, you know, turnovers be the name of the game. Can't turn the ball over and win. So the Texans lost to the Patriots. This was a pretty good game. The Texans defense don't look the same. The Patriots beat the Texans 27-20. Tom Brady was Tom Brady. He looked the part. Deshaun Jackson didn't look the same way he looked last year. Defense is catching up. So Deshaun, you know, it's sophomore year, just the first game. He had 176 yards, one touchdown, one pick. Wasn't great, but wasn't horrible either. But we're going to see how he progresses through the season. Still coming back off the knee injury, right? For the Texans, Lamar Miller had 20 carries for 98 yards, and DeAndre Hopkins had 78 yards. The Patriots defense looked pretty good, too. Brady had 277 yards, three touchdowns, and one pick. Burkhead had 18 carries for 64 yards. Gronkowski had seven receptions, 123 yards, and one touchdown. So, Patriots looked good. I'm not going to lie. They looked good. The Texans defense don't look the same. All right, so the Ravens beat the shit out of the Buffalo Bills 47-3. For the Bills, Jared Allen had 74 yards passing. Murphy had six attempts, 31 yards rushing. Z Jones, had three receptions, 26 yards. That's not going to cut it. Hey, Kevin Benjamin, every week I'm calling y'all asking, where you at, Kevin Benjamin? Where you at, Kevin Benjamin? Can't call folk out. Tell my Cam ain't good. Where you at on the stat sheet? So Joe Flacco had 236 yards and three touchdowns. Kay Dixon had 13 attempts, 44 yards and touchdown. W. Snead had four receptions, 49 yards and one touchdown. All right, so Jaguars beat the Giants 20-15. Blake Bortles had 176 yards passing, one touchdown, one pick. T.J. Yeldon had 11 attempts, 51 yards. Kay Cole, three receptions, 54 yards. You know, Leonard Fournette left the game early because he tweaked his hamstring. Leonard Fournette has a history of injuries, so we're going to see how long he lasts in the NFL with that history of injuries. He's going to change the way he do certain things, right? Eli Manning had 224 yards passing, one pick. Saquon Barkley had 16 attempts for 106 yards and touchdown. I heard some people on the radio were trying to trash him because they were saying a lot of that came from one play, but still he had 106 yards rushing and one touchdown, so shut up. Odell Beckham had 11 receptions for 111 yards. 11-11. 49ers lost to the Vikings 24-16. Jimmy Garoppolo, he had 261 yards passing, one touchdown, three picks. Kirk Cousins had 244 yards, two touchdowns for the 49ers. And Barilda had 11 attempts for 46 yards. L. Murray, Murray for the Vikings had 11 attempts for 42 yards. For the 49ers, Kettle had 5 receptions, 90 yards. For the Vikings, Old Thielen had 6 receptions for 102 yards. The old Thielen face ass. Thielen be balling, though. The Bucks and the Saints had a shootout, and Fitzpatrick looked good. The Bucks put up 48 points. Score was 48-40. And Ryan Fitzpatrick had 417 yards for touchdowns. Drew Brees had 439 yards, three touchdowns. For the Bucks, Barber had 19 carries, 69 yards. Alvin Kamara had 8 attempts, 29 yards, 2 touchdowns. But Alvin Kamara had over 100 receiving yards. Mike Evans for the Bucks had 7 receptions, 147 yards, and touchdowns. For the Saints, M. Thomas had 16 receptions, 180 yards, and touchdowns. The Steelers and the Browns tied 21-21. Roethlisberger, 335 yards, one touchdown, three picks. Tyrod Taylor, 197 yards, one touchdown, one pick. James Conner for the Steelers had 31 attempts, 135 yards, two touchdowns. Taylor for the Browns had 8 attempts, 77 yards, and touchdown. For the receiving for the Steelers, Juju Smith-Schuster had 5 receptions, 119 yards. Landry for the Browns had, Jarvis Landry had 7 receptions, 106 yards. Bengals beat the Colts 34-23. Ain't get to all them stats no more. Dolphins beat the Titans 27-20. Chiefs beat the Chargers 38-28. Chiefs got an explosive offense, but what their defense talking about, we don't know. Andrew Luck did look good in his return to football. So, Seahawks lost to the Broncos 27-24. The Cowboys lost to the Panthers 16-8. Cam Newton looked pretty good. The Redskins beat the Cardinals 24-6. The Bears lost to the Packers 24-23. So Aaron Rodgers do his thing. The Eagles, and the Monday night was the Eagles and the Falcons, and the Eagles beat the Falcons 18-12. Now, start of week two was last night's game, the Thursday night game between who played last night? Oh, the Bengals and the Ravens. And the Bengals beat the Ravens. Did they have that on? Yeah. Bengals beat the Ravens 34-23. Flacco had 376 yards, two touchdowns, two picks. Collins, the running back, had 9 carries, 35 yards. Jay Brown for the Ravens had 4 receptions, 92 yards, one touchdown. For the Bengals, Dalton had 265 yards passing, 4 touchdowns. Jay Mixon had 21 carries, 84 yards. Todd Boyd had 6 receptions, 91 yards, and a touchdown. A.J. Green had 3 touchdown receptions in the first half. I think he had like 5 carries, 56 yards, 3 touchdowns overall stats. So, you know, a little recap of week 2 in the NFL. Week 2 in the NFL. Don't feel me now. So there it is. So, you know, come Monday, I have more information, more college football, more football information. There it is. So, I caught the first episode of LeBron James's The Shop, and I thought it was a pretty good episode. They're having honest conversations about sports, business, and things like that, talking life, a plethora of different people, Charles Oakley, 2 Chainz, Rich Paul, LeBron James, Steve Stout, the other black dude with the raspy voice, I don't know his name, he did most of the talking. But they had a pretty good, you know, mix of people, and they're talking about real issues, talking about life, talking about being black. You know, LeBron James talking about how he, you know, he just saying things that we all know. You got to learn how to how to get along with white people. You gotta learn how to move in white spaces and things like that. Talking about the business of sports. I think it's a good show. I like to see black men sit around and have intelligent conversations about things that's going on in our society. Still be able to have fun, but have confident conversations. Being able to talk about race and all those issues, not have to sugarcoat it. Being able to really talk. I forgot who the white guy in the room was, but just being able to really talk about life, what's going on as black men, as black people, things that's affecting us in this, in our society, in our world. I think the shop is pretty good. I applaud LeBron James for many things that he's doing. I wish him much success. But I just like stimulating conversations. I like real conversations, open and honest conversations about things that are actually affecting us in our community today. You know, being a businessman, understanding the business, learning business, just starting things. I just like what these boys doing. Black men, but the fact that people are able to see black men do these things on this level. And also the life beyond sports component. So one thing I do like about LeBron James, and we didn't get it from Michael Jordan growing up, because we know Mike had the shoe deal, but we know that was more so Nike than Michael Jordan. But young people being able to see LeBron James as more than just an athlete, being able to see him as a real legitimate businessman who made great moves. You know, Magic Johnson is somebody that we was looking up to as far as the business aspect. Then as we got older, we learned more about Michael Jordan, certain things that he was doing. Then see him become the owner of the Charlotte Bobcats or Charlotte Hornets, or whoever the hell the damn team name is now. But just imagery is cool. The imagery is there, it's on point. And also the conversation, the language, and all those things that they're using, you know, they're talking like us. Like they're not talking like white people. John, I don't like those black people. No, they keeping it real and talking about race and all those issues. Like, you know, some cracker shit be happening, man. We gotta talk about this cracker shit when it be happening, right? And not being afraid, you know, having safe spaces. And it's not necessarily a safe space to show. And of course, they're not going to get as raw as I get on here talk about them crackers. But I like it. I applaud LeBron and everybody who part of it. Yeah, man. Hey, LeBron, holla at your boy. Let me come in. Let me talk with y'all. You know what I'm saying? It's a good thing. It's a good thing to see. I do like the optics. I do like the imagery. I do like people being able to see members from our community, being able to do those things. Then the next step from that, after it gets developed, is how can it help to empower the community? And how can the community help empower it and build and go on? You know, black economics, black business, you know, doing what we got to do, spurring that. But it does put that idea of entrepreneurship, of ownership, of black people owning and controlling things. Even though, yes, that's partnership with HBO and all those things, but we can create our own. Our BBO, Black People Box Office, you know, Black People TV, stuff like that. That's the next step. But, you know, one time for the shop. I like the shop. I hope the shop continues. I hope LeBron continues and everybody else who's involved in the show. Everybody continue doing wonderful things in the community. Because it's a good look. It's a good positive look. So one time for that. All right. So our last story before I rant, the Seattle Storm win the 2018 NBA championship, and that means my baby mama Maya Moore didn't win it. It's all right, Maya. I love you. I truly do love you with all my heart. But one time for Sue Bird, Breonna Stewart, and the rest of the Seattle Storm. So let's read this. With 30 points from Breonna Stewart, 29 from Natasha Howard, and 10 from Sue Bird, the Storm swept the Washington Mystics in 3 games to win the 2018 NBA title, the third in franchise history. A celebration parade is planned. Was planned for 1 p.m. Sunday because they won that last week. As bedlam burst and champagne poured, Breonna Stewart stood tall inside the cramped plastic line, visited the locker room, and allowed herself a smile of gratification. This was inside Eagle Bank Arena, a college basketball arena that hosted the WNBA Finals, where the Storm won its third league championship. The ultra-confident, steely cool Stewart had a feeling about this game, just as she had a feeling about this series. About this series and this season. Way at the beginning, I said at the start, I was tired of losing, said Stewart. The finals and league MVP. So So to end it this way, there is nothing better. Best feeling in the world. The 2018 WNBA Finals will go down in history as a blowout because that's what a 98-82 victory and three-game sweep looks like when you look at it years from now. But the score won't come close to telling the true story. This was total domination. The young Seattle team that lost in the first round of the playoffs the past 2 years and won just 15 games last year obliterated Washington for its first crown since 2010. The Storm became the 16th sweep of finals in three games, something it did 8 years ago, the last time Seattle won a title. Sue Bird, the league's oldest player at 37, who played with the mask over her broken nose and the only holdover from the Storm's championship teams in 2010 and 2004. It's incredible to be sitting here right now, said the 17-year veteran who finished with 10 points and 10 assists. This is probably going to be one of the defining moments of my career. To have played however many years I've been playing, to have won all these places, but then to do it at the end in such a way that was different from all the others, it's really incredible. If the Storm's first title of 2004 was unexpected bliss in the 2010 run for a championship when Seattle won its franchise-best 28 games during the regular season before going undefeated in the playoffs was dominant, then this iteration of the Storm was a combination of the previous championship team. Before the year, nobody picked us to win a title, and I'm not sure if we're thinking about it, said Alicia Clark, the Storm's defensive ace, who finished with 15 points and 9 rebounds. But we got better throughout the year, and to see it end like this, it's a dream. It really is. It feels so surreal. I can't believe it. Aside from a narrow 75-73 win in the game two, the Storm thoroughly dominated Washington in a lopsided series that began with a blowout, set 89-76 win in game one. That ain't no real blowout, but they won. The Storm stayed true to its mantra to never look back and always focus on the next game. They forgot about their past, which included 7 straight playoff losses on the road and focused entirely on game three. Honestly, we've been that way all season, said Natasha Howard, who proved to be perhaps the missing piece in the Storm's championship puzzle. We stayed in the moment. Howard was the unexpected star of game three, who finished with 29 points in the game high 14 rebounds. Sometimes teams focus so much on Stewie, and that allows Tosh to take advantage, Clark said. The difference between really good teams at this level can be if you're able to get production from places that you don't normally expect, and then your stars have to be who they are. Stewart saved her best for last and scored 30 points, a career high for the playoffs, on 11 of 22 shooting, including 4 for 5 3-pointers. She also finished with 8 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals in 39 minutes. I told somebody I'm built for this, and I mean that, said Stewart, who won 4 NCAA titles at the University of Connecticut. This doesn't feel like my first trip to the finals. I wasn't nervous. I was calm. I was ready to take the championship trophy back to Seattle where it belongs. The Storm, which had the best record in the regular season at 26-8 and the number one playoff seed, was too quick, too efficient on the perimeter offensively, and too good for number three Washington. What was billed as a battle between two of the league's most lethal three-point shooting teams turned into a one-sided display for the Storm. Seattle converted 13-26 shots behind the arc in game three, while Washington never found the mark behind the arc. The Mystics were 8-23 on Wednesday and 11-60 for the series. We shot the ball extremely well, and I don't know if it was our defense or shots just don't go. We shot the ball extremely well, and I don't know if it was our defense or shots just not going in for them, Coach Don Hughes said. Probably a combination of both. But our perimeter shooting allowed us to create some separation, and then we managed the game pretty well. So that's what's up, man. The Seattle Storm of 2018 WNBA champion. So you know me, I love WNBA. So we gotta show this love. Seattle, the champion. Seattle. The champion, Seattle. The champion, shout out to the Seattle Storm. You're the champion. Champions. All righty then. time for my weekly rant. And my weekly rant is aimed mostly at the Steelers players, the Steelers offensive line, and the other players we're talking at, Bull, and a little bit at Le'Veon Bell. It's just a few days before the Steelers season starts, but running back Le'Veon Bell's holdout is still going. His absence from team meetings today pretty much guarantees he won't play in week one. This is an old article because week one is played and he still hasn't played. He still hasn't showed up. So he won't play in week one, which is probably his plan to avoid as much wear and tear on his body as he can, set another 400-touch season to preserve his ability to get decent free agency offers next summer. The extent of his holdout has surprised at least Steelers center Marquise Pouncey, who told reporters on Monday he'll be here Wednesday. Count on that. Now, before I get on Pouncey, I got to get on Bell, because if Bell told him that he was going to be there Wednesday and he ain't show up, that makes him a liar. That means he lied to his team. So he can't be mad at his team for lying to them. But the way they handled the situation is pussy and bullshit. So Pouncey apparently didn't enjoy being wrong, because he had some harsh words for Bell and his agent today. Marquise Pouncey on Le'Veon Bell's agent suggesting he'd like to know Steelers' plan for running back this year. This just stupid. You can't play football like that. And that's from somebody. I can't say this person's name. Marquise Pouncey is clearly done with Le'Veon Bell's absence. Said he'd much prefer Bell just to say when he's going to show up, even if it's week 10. We play hide and why play hide and seek? Why let your agent say this? Just man up and tell us what you're going to do. So most strangely, the Steelers NFL player rep Ramon Foster threw any kind of solidarity out the window, talking shit about Bell, then complaining about the offensive line salaries, which seems like a gripe worth bringing up with his bosses rather than blaming on running back. So, thanks to the prescribed rigid rookie salary structure and then the repeated use of franchise tags by Steelers, Le'Veon Bell hasn't been able to negotiate a contract since he came in the league in 2013. Throughout his summer, however, he's seen guys like Odell Beckham, Todd Gurley, Khalil Mack, and Aaron Donald receive their big contracts with guaranteed money. So now, using his status along as one of the best players in his position, the best player in his position, Bell is finally pulling out all the stops to get what he believes he's earned, which he has earned, he's rightfully earned, only to get called selfish and apathetic by his teammates who acting like bitches, right? Seems weird for his fellow workers to complain that Bell is earning too much money for the value he brings to the team, rather than question if, say, Art Rooney II deserves his fortune for all the hard work he did being the grandson of a rich guy. So, you know, what's the other dude name? So Marquise Pouncey and Ramon Foster. See, Ramon Foster, the motherfucker, talking about, he needs to come back this year and play this year and get his money next year. First of all, you don't talk about another man's money to the reporter. All y'all football players who should be fighting for guaranteed contracts, y'all should be lining up behind Le'Veon Bell, because they fighting for these guaranteed contracts with the garbage CBA deals that y'all got. Right, that's one of the reasons why the NFL will never be able to make real moves and have real powers. The NFL players, rather, will never be able to make real moves and have real powers, because too much rugged individualism in the NFL. Too many personalities, too many people, too many numbers, over 1,200 players, and you got too many people with individual attitudes. Because the money disparities. You're talking about people who could be making $20 million a year, and then people who could be making 200,000 a year, you know, 400,000 a year, 900,000 a year, things like that. You know, for regular people, a lot of you regular people, you'd be like, $900,000 a year is a lot of money. $900,000 ain't a lot of money, especially when you're balling out. Now, in Le'Veon Bell's case, the little $14 million that he's getting in the franchise tag, that's not enough. The man needs a full contract. He needs like a 5-year, $120 million contract with at least $60 million guaranteed. That's what Le'Veon Bell needs. Le'Veon Bell deserves a contract like that. A 5-year, $120 million contract with at least $60 million guaranteed. The man is the best running back of football. He's been the best running back of football for a long time. There's no argument of how valuable he is to his team. There's no argument about his production as a running back and a receiver. as a running back and a receiver, one of the most dangerous people in the league when he touches the ball. Effective. Le'Veon Bell missed a couple games last year and still came back, and I think he led the Steelers in receiving, or like the number of receptions. I think he led the Steelers in the number of receptions. I could be wrong, but I think he did. But the numbers he put up, like touchdowns, rushing yards, receiving yards, catches, the number of touches. Dude had over 400 touches last year. Over 400 touches. And they're now saying that we want to give you another friend. They're giving him the franchise tag for the second year in a row. After all of that, and Marquise Pouncey and Ron Burgundy, Ramon Foster. Y'all want to talk greasy. See, I'm with a lot of, and I know this story old, and I'm just catching up, but I'm with a lot of the sports commentators that talked about this last week. If I'm Le'Veon Bell, man, go ahead and trade me, man. Let me get out of Pittsburgh. These are my offensive linemen. You can't be on the side of the people who are doing the labor, but siding with the motherfuckers who ain't doing the labor. The owners got their money. And guess what, Ramon? When they don't need you, they're going to cut you. You're done when they don't need you. Guess what? You're going to be trying to fight for a contract at one point. And motherfuckers going to be saying that, hey, I'm down for players holding out. But what I'm not down with is flight. Look, them Pouncey twins, man. Them Pouncey twins, they different cats, man. They some different type of. Remember, these dudes were supporting and backing and trying to defend Aaron Hernandez as guilty as he was. The Pouncey twins always find themselves into some crazy stuff. They not the sharpest knives in the draw. They just not. The Pouncey twins, they not the sharpest knives in the draw. Something look off about them dudes. They great football players, great athletes, but something off about them dudes when it comes to social issues and stuff and just regular life and just smart stuff versus stupid stuff. They always seem to teeter toward the stupid stuff. They're not the smartest ones. And they could be mad at me. They might hear this, might not hear this and want to come out, whatever. But the history is there. But it's like one thing you don't do is you pull the bitch move. Foster and Pouncey, y'all pull bitch moves when you trying to talk about your players, your teammates' money. Basically, you don't want the teammate to get you money, but you want him to go out there and put his body on the line. What type of shit is that? Y'all do that. Go out there and just put your body on the line like that without your money. You won't. We know you won't. Man, you don't look. With as weak as the CBA and the NFL union is and all the players and everything that they got going on, as weak as that thing is and as much like dissension and as much as y'all fight for y'all contracts and y'all money and all that stuff, as much as y'all be fighting for that, to come out with this weak stance and this little weak thing and talking against your player, hey, shout out to Antonio Brown for having Bell's back, for having Le'Veon's back. Shout out to Antonio Brown for having Le'Veon's back. But down with Pouncey and Foster for talking greasy. Man, that's some whole shit, man. Come on, y'all grown men. Y'all understand the game. Y'all understand the money. Y'all understand how NFLs are grossly underpaid. NFL players should have guaranteed contracts. Le'Veon Bell should have been got his money 2 years ago. Le'Veon Bell shouldn't still be getting no damn goddamn franchise tags. How you going to try to give a man a franchise tag 2 years in a row? You don't want to pay the man long term. If you don't want to pay the man long term, trade him. Trade the man if you don't want to pay him long term. But what we not going to have, what we can't have, and what needs to be squashed, and that needs to be stepped on, that needs to be extinguished quick. They need to be checked. Somebody should have pulled them, Mike Tomlin, all that. You should pull them to the side to check them. Hey, look here. That's a no-no. What we not going to do, first of all, talk about our teammates, talk greasy about our teammates, but talk about their money like that. Like he don't deserve his money. I can see if Le'Veon was hot garbage and didn't deserve the money, but Le'Veon is the best running back in the league who deserves his money and has showed out. He's overperformed those contracts. Get that man his money. Get that man his $60 million guaranteed. Get that man a 5-6 year contract. Get that man $20 million a year, $19-20 million a year. Come on, man. Todd Gurley just got his money. Todd Gurley ain't better than Le'Veon Bell. Todd Gurley ain't far from Le'Veon. Todd Gurley ain't better than Le'Veon. He ain't been doing this as long as Le'Veon. The other teams are smart. Even though the Rams was bullshitting on the Aaron Donald, Aaron Donald eventually got his money. Aaron Donald got his money. Khalil Mack got his money. All these folks got their money, but Le'Veon can't get his money. Man, y'all crazy. The Pittsburgh Steelers are crazy, and I do think this is Le'Veon's last year in Pittsburgh, even if he plays this year. Trade the man. But what we can't have is fuckboy activity from Pouncey and Foster. Fuckboy activity. They act like they filling out their applications for the National Football Association of America with that. Like, I've always had the Pounceys in crazy category, but I ain't never had them in fuckboy category. I just had them in crazy category because I never really witnessed them doing no fuckboy shit. But this move is a fuckboy move. Now, I'm not putting both Pouncey twins. The other Pouncey twin that's in San Diego, he got nothing to do with this. He ain't in the fuckboy category. But Marquise Pouncey, the center for the Pittsburgh Steelers, you and Ramon Foster, y'all in the fuckboy category. That's some fuckboy shit that y'all did. And if you don't want to be fuckboys, don't be doing fuckboy shit. But get out your feelings. Y'all act like it. A lot of these dudes these days, bitch made soft ass dudes. Get out your feelings, man. Y'all get out y'all feelings. Y'all know that man deserves his money. That's some whole shit y'all did, man. Get out your goddamn feelings, man. You a team. You're supposed to ride together. Y'all supposed to stand behind that man and put some pressure on the team to make sure that he get his goddamn money. Y'all some hoes, man. Y'all aren't worth any more of my breath because y'all on some fuck boy shit. And that's all I got to say about that. So I'm going to wrap this up with a little harmonics. Thank you. I will be playing at your local gas station. Just holler at me. You can book me. I'll be at your local gas station playing my harmonica, getting it in. Hey, just if you're going to throw underwear at me, ladies only. No dudes can't throw no drawers at me. Don't get down like that. And then ladies, want to throw underwear at me, make sure they clean. I'm Joseph Ward. This is the Fix Sports Podcast. Two fingers in the air like a player because I just don't care.
Call the president. President, we need the National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack.
Rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lex is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from the Air Force. There's no one that can match.